Hello, and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight for our special coverage of the Republican National Convention. I'm Brandis Friedman. Delegates are in place in Milwaukee with big news already from the convention. As we know, Ohio Senator J.D. Vance will be Donald Trump's running mate. And also today, we have more reaction to this weekend's assassination attempt on former President Trump. Now, we'll hear from Amanda Vinicky inside the convention center in a few moments. But first, we want to start our team coverage with Heather Sherone coming to us live from the Baird Center in Milwaukee, part of the convention complex. Obviously, the first night of the Republican convention, it did reach a crescendo tonight, Heather, with the first appearance of former President Donald Trump since he survived that assassination attempt alongside his newly minted running mate, Ohio Senator J.D. Vance. WTTW News reporter Heather Sherone with more. Heather, a little more than 48 hours ago, President Trump was shot in the ear by a 20-year-old Pennsylvania man. Tell us what happened when he stepped on that stage tonight in Milwaukee.
Well, you could see that he was wearing a large white bandage covering nearly all of his right ear, an indication of just how close he came to the would-be assassin's bullet. Now, he first appeared to the convention hall on the big screen, and then he appeared to take a long, deliberate walk onto the stage where he was greeted with loud cheers, which Amanda Vinicky says were deafening inside the convention hall. It was somewhat more muted on television, perhaps because so many of the delegates were trying to capture this moment in American history with their cell phones for themselves. He then walked to the presidential box and he greeted his newly minted running mate, J.D. Vance, senator from Ohio.
And Heather, in the wake of the shooting, of course, there have been widespread calls for everyone to sort of ratchet down the rhetoric and to unite as Americans. Did we hear any evidence of that tonight?
Well, there was certainly an attempt by some speakers to try to appear to the better angels of Americans' nature. It did not always seem to be an easy fit because, of course, this is a campaign by Donald Trump known for his slash and burn politics. In fact, Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson, of course, greeting his hometown crowd here in Milwaukee, he called the Democratic agenda and their policy a clear and present danger to America, of course, invoking the legal standard that sometimes allows law enforcement to use deadly force. Afterwards, he told our friends over at PBS NewsHour that that was the wrong speech, that he had not planned to say that, but the old speech got loaded into his teleprompter and he wasn't sure how to pivot. That, I think, it tells you a lot about just how much this assassination attempt has changed the way Republicans and Democrats are now approaching this campaign.
Right, of course, Heather, that he is, of course, coming so clear with that and explaining what happened. This was also Vance's first public appearance as the Republican nominee for vice president. What can you tell us about him?
Well, Vance is a Politico neophyte, elected only 2 years ago to the United States Senate, better known as an author. Hillbilly Elegy, of course, was a major hit as people sought to understand the emerging rural-urban divide just a couple of years ago. You may have seen the Netflix movie starring Amy Adams and Glenn Close, but now he is set to be Donald Trump's running mate, of course, replacing Vice President Mike Pence, who broke with President Trump after the January 6th Capitol insurrection and launched his own unsuccessful bid for president this year.
And of course, Heather, the focus tonight was on economics, the so-called Bidenomics and President Biden's economic plan. What case did the Republicans make against him?
Well, a long series of speeches tried to make the case that President Biden had essentially presided over an economic catastrophe with high inflation, higher than normal unemployment, and really just depicting an America in decline. Now, that was not always true. For example, there were several speakers who said that there just was so much inflation, but as we've reported, inflation has moderated and is now sort of back to historically appropriate appropriate levels, according to the Federal Reserve. There was also a lot of talk about business growth. In fact, the number of businesses created under President Joe Biden is up significantly since he took office, and of course, since Donald Trump left office in 2020 at the height of the COVID-19 pandemic. So they tried to make their case. It remains to be seen whether swing voters in states like Wisconsin will buy that message.
Heather, something else that they talked about a lot tonight, you know, of course there's economics, but we also heard a lot about immigration this evening. What kind of parallels, how are they using their argument about immigration in their argument about economics?
Well, so every night here at the convention has its own theme. Tonight was very much focused on economics, but there was a lot of talk of sort of things being out of control. And one of the issues that Republicans reach for most quickly is immigration. This whole notion that perhaps there are, you know, illegal immigrants crossing the border without permission, coming here and taking people's jobs. We heard that from a lot of speakers. That will be a theme that they will return to in the days ahead.
All right, Heather, thank you so much. And we'll see you again later in the program. And as mentioned earlier, we will have Amanda Beneke join us live from inside the convention hall in just a few moments as well. But first, more analysis of this evening's first night of the Republican convention. We're joined again by Heather Hendershot, professor of communication studies at Northwestern University. Her most recent book, When the News Broke, is about the 1968 Chicago Democratic Convention. She teaches about, among other things, the media and American politics. Thank you, Heather, for joining us again.
Thank you for having me.
So let's start again. Let's talk some more about this very dramatic moment when former President Trump showed up in the convention hall to a standing ovation from supporters, his ear clearly bandaged from taking a bullet on Saturday. How do you think this moment will play for the party?
Well, they kind of built to it all night. It's the climactic moment. And the way that they framed it was that the at one point, someone said the devil. They didn't say Satan, but they said that the devil or evil or something
Senator Tim Scott, I believe, referring to.
Had a gun and gone. And, of course, it's not a pro-gun control argument. It's an anti-devil argument. And God had sort of stepped in and helped the former President Trump move his head ever so slightly so that he was saved. And so it was really set up as a kind of religious moment, and then he shows up as a kind of savior. And I don't mean to overplay it and sound too dramatic, but it was felt very worshipful to me, and sort of more. There's always a climactic moment when your candidate comes in, right? That's why they're there, to celebrate their candidate. But it was kind of amped up to a pretty high level, I thought.
Yeah, and Senator Tim Scott was not the only one to invoke religion and Christianity and that kind of spiritualism thanking the Lord. And tell me a little bit about how that sort of plays into the Republican Party's messaging.
Well, it's the idea that their man is like the chosen one, right, the chosen candidate. And it's so interesting to me that he's gone with J.D. Vance, given that he had an evangelical running mate before, right, in the past, Pence, and I think he kind of checked that off. Well, I've got the Christian right on my side now. That worked with Pence. Pence did not deliver for me in terms of the total loyalty that I wanted in overthrowing the election and so on. So we can move on to someone who will be of some appeal to that Christian base, but doesn't have to be as overt about it because he's already tapped in to the Christians, and they're bringing that language into their speeches. I'm sorry, I can't remember her last name, the Alabama senator.
Yes, I know who you're talking about.
Yes.
Whose name I also cannot remember.
Forgetting.
I want to say Brown, but that might be wrong.
Yes, she gave the famous speech, you know, after the State of the Union. She was there in a similar kind of pose, of really evoking the speech that she'd done before, even though that was in her kitchen, right, with her cross showing and so on. So we're still feeling that strong kind of Christian right presence, even with Pence off the ticket.
As we remember, the 2020 convention was largely virtual. We know that the Republicans had a lot more in-person speeches and audiences than the Democrats did that year. But what does it mean for the party to be able to get back together in person and to create this kind of production?
It's huge for both parties. And in a way, I mean, just to give some historical perspective on it, the goal of the parties has always been, we want to control this spectacle. We want to create a TV show. We just want the networks to show up and the cable channels and show our show, right, and have total control. And sometimes that backfires. In 1968, they didn't control the situation, right? And for the Democrats, it would look very bad in Chicago. In 1964, the Republicans had problems with their candidate, Barry Goldwater, who was an extremist. So 2020, in some ways, was like the dream come true, not to be too flippant about the crisis of COVID. But in this lockdown situation, you could completely control the show of what your party was, so that the Democrats showed democracy in action through their visuals, going state to state, having people say, you know, in the great state of Rhode Island, we have fried calamari and hold up the platters or whatever.
And we give our delegates or our delegates, you know,
and we
for
give
Biden.
Our votes to Biden, you know. And it was a kind of beautiful series of images outside. And then the Republicans are in this kind of hermetic space, speaking to the camera and pausing for cheering when there's no
that
cheering.
That does not exist.
It doesn't exist. And so it ended up feeling rather authoritarian or on the heavy-handed side compared to the Democrats, who felt very open and so on. Now we're back to normal, as it were, the regular kind of convention hall situation. And it's the first time we've seen Trump with his party in a regular convention, totally united behind him. If you think back to 2016, you still had people there who had been rallying for Ted Cruz, or maybe Marco Rubio, or whatever, and he was bringing that party together. And then in 16, it's this weird indoors COVID moment. And now we're back, and it's the party of Trump. The GOP that existed before is no longer exists, right? It's the party of Trump.
So tonight's theme, as we've mentioned, was Make America Wealthy Once Again. And I've noticed the once, that oh, creeping into the MAGA sentence versus Make America Wealthy Again. It's Make America Wealthy Once Again. Convention, you know, playing campaign ads featuring everyday Americans discussing the country's current economic state. And a single working mother delivered a speech on the stage this evening. Were they successful in their economic messaging tonight?
Well, there's definitely some misleading statements about the state of the economy and so on. And there's no mention of tax breaks for the wealthy and a lot of the things that, you know, happened in the last administration. I was really struck as a media historian by that moment where the woman said, I'm a single mother. And I flash back to Dan Quayle attacking Murphy Brown. This was ages ago.
Yes.
For being
in the
a 90s. Single mother on television, and how this showed the decline of America and decline of our morality and so on. And it became a major Republican talking point somehow, Murphy Brown, the TV
Murphy
show.
Brown Day,
yeah,
yes.
Right? And then this woman says, you know, I'm a single mother. And I thought, are they actually speaking out to single mothers right now? And then she got to this point where it was clear her husband had died because of the opioid crisis. And it was a weird kind of shift, like, we're not for single mothers. It's just this woman has endured this tragedy. And she started to cry a little bit. It was high melodrama, and the crowd went kind of wild. And it felt, not to in any way demean her story and so on, or to be unsympathetic to her story, but it felt like a climactic televisual moment of melodrama. You know, you could be watching an episode of The West Wing and see this kind of drama play out in front of you.
Right. An emotional moment, obviously.
Very emotional moment.
Playing to the emotions of this woman, as you said, who has endured, a terrible tragedy.
Absolutely, yeah.
A couple of jabs at President Biden's physical fitness, a number of them, you know, referring to, is he awake, and referring to his naps and his work hours. I think one of the speakers referred to the economy and President Biden being in decline, blaming his administration for problems like high inflation, high interest, high taxes.
Someone
what did
called
you
him
hear?
A vegetable.
A very strong word. Yes, someone
Pretty
did call him a vegetable.
Word, yeah. I did note that, but I was a little surprised, and this may change over the next few days, there wasn't more energy spent on Biden. It was more boosting their side or saying Biden had failed, but not laying into the personal traits kind of as much as I thought. And I'd heard earlier today someone refer to Kamala Harris as immigrants, something like that. I feel like they're leaning a little bit into Kamala Harris with the idea, well, maybe she's going to be the nominee. And so they're kind of holding back on Biden in case they need to lay into an attack on Harris. And I'm not sure that we're going to see any of that resolved over the next few days. But maybe they're hedging their bets a little bit.
Right. And that was my next question, because I did hear them use her name quite a bit.
Yeah.
And
more than you would expect.
Certainly on the first night, and linking them together quite a bit. And it made me kind of question whether or not they're doing that, because, you know, just in case there's the chance that she ends up being the nominee.
I think they're laying the groundwork a little bit. They're kind of setting up the narrative that they'll go on the attack against her potentially.
For the Democrats, you think that makes it confusing, because if, you know, by whatever circumstance, you know, President Biden should step down, and if Vice President Kamala Harris is not the nominee, mm-hmm. Then they've spent all that time working on Vice President Kamala Harris when the nominee is somebody else. But obviously, only the future will tell us what happens next. You know, we've talked a little bit about toning down the rhetoric that everyone has called for in the last few days in the wake of this assassination attempt on former President Trump. Did you hear any of that? Did you hear any toned down rhetoric?
I feel like they kind of took the middle ground. You know, they weren't quite. I mean, they had Charlie Kirk up there, right? Who is on the more extreme
turning point?
But they weren't leaning into that incendiary kind of violent rhetoric, and I think they were sort of bolstering their own hero, like bolstering Trump and preparing for his presence and the sort of dramatic moment, rather than at that moment laying into the Democrats' cause this to happen. And what I've been seeing in the media the past few days, that the talking points in the Republicans have been like the liberal media is to blame for this, that they're talking so much. And J.D. Vance himself, and this may be why he got the nomination, really, ultimately, he said basically, and you may remember the exact quote better than I do, but something like that by constantly saying that Trump is some kind of authoritarian fascist, they made this happen.
I think I could remember the J.D. Vance quote. I'm not quite sure. But J.D. Vance used to be a member of, as a sort of a commentator.
He said, I'm a
member
of
the liberal media as well by being a commentator.
Yeah.
Heather Hendershot, we're going to come back to you in just, I want you to stick around because I want to bring in our full Spotlight Politics team to join us right now, or some of our Spotlight Politics team right now. Heather Sharone, Nick Blumberg, they're live in Milwaukee with us. And we've still got Northwestern University's Heather Hendershot here to talk a little bit more. Nick, as you know, we wrap up this first day of convention speeches. Chicago, the name of Chicago was invoked once again. Tell us about that.
Well, Brandis, as anyone who has watched Republican conventions in past years knows, Chicago's a pretty frequent punching bag for Donald Trump, as well as for plenty of other GOP politicians who say, if you want to look at everything that's wrong with cities under the control of Democratic politicians, look no further than Chicago. Senator Tim Scott set up his remarks by saying that liberal elites hate it when he says this, but that America is not a racist nation, to which he got a huge round of applause. Here's how he followed that up.
Look on the south side of Chicago. Poor black kids trapped in failing schools. Thousands shot every single year, including one of my former interns, Daquan. But there's good news. It's conservative values that restores hope. It's Republican policies that lifts people up.
Now, certainly a lot of Democrats and, you know, school advocates would have some things to say about Scott's comments when it comes to Democratic education policy in Chicago and other cities. You know, Trump's education secretary, Betsy DeVos, was a longtime advocate of charter schools, which public school supporters say drains money from those, as well as school choice vouchers, using tax dollars to, you know, allow parents to send their students to private schools. You know, when it comes to the issue of violence, certainly Chicago is always dinged for its rate of violent crime and murders, but when you look at it on a per capita basis, there are other cities that are less populous than Chicago but that have higher rates of violent crime. In recent years, that's been places like St. Louis, Baltimore, Detroit, and in fact, Chicago's murder rate has been on the decline. There was an 11.5% drop in 2022 and a 13% drop in 2023. So certainly some crucial context to those remarks.
And Heather Sharone, I want to come back to you in just a second because I want to build on something with Heather Hendershot about that Tim Scott soundbite that we heard just a bit ago. He is not the first person on that stage tonight of color, particularly a black person on that stage tonight, who said that America is not or has never been a racist country. What do you make of how they stacked all that up?
A number of black speakers all in a row, and I kind of felt like they were like, let's just push out the black speakers and then we're not really going to see them too much moving forward, and they cut to the audience in reaction shots, and you're not seeing black people in the audience there. And which, I mean, I've watched decades and decades of TV coverage of conventions, Republicans have a problem finding blacks in the audience to have the cameras cut to. It's just, you know, it's an underrepresented crowd there. So this is a pattern that we've seen, obviously, over time. And it was shocking to see each black speaker make a reference to America not being a racist country. And sometimes in the context of, you know, one of them said, I grew up in the Jim Crow South. My parents grew up in the Jim Crow South, and they specifically told me America's not a racist country. And I thought, were they able to vote, but they told you it's not racist that we can't vote or there's voter suppression. It seemed like there was a pretty complicated backstory there, and we were getting a strange soundbite to sort of take away from it.
Right, and they all said sort of the same thing that we've heard before, which strikes as sort of a talking point, right? The party line.
A talking point, yeah.
And I should also mention, while we're going back to Heather Sharon in Milwaukee, that Amanda Vinicky, we're having some problems with the satellite there because of the severe weather that's happening tonight. So that is why we're not hearing from Amanda Vinicky right now, but we are glad that Nick and Heather are very safe. Heather, would you consider this first day a success for the Illinois Republican Party?
Well, you know, they did sort of what they had hoped to do, right? They got together, they had breakfast, they sang a few verses of Kumbaya. There was a very public sort of rapprochement between Darren Bailey and Mike Bost, who fought bitterly in the Republican primary to go to Congress. Now, Darren Bailey has said that he might run again against Mike Bost, but, you know, for today at least, they were all singing from the same hymnal, and that hymnal was Get Joe Biden Defeated in November. There's a lot that divides the Illinois Republican Party, but they all agree that they want Joe Biden to be a one-term president, and they want Donald Trump to get a second term. That, at least for today, and perhaps through the end of the week, is enough to sort of get them on the same page.
To both of you, Nick and Heather, Governor Pritzker was supposed to have made a stop in Milwaukee this week during the RNC. What happened?
Well, you know, it was the assassination attempt that has really roiled everything. And it really sort of made the Democrats sort of think twice about how they were going to campaign in the aftermath. I think that we will start to see that strategy come in a little bit more focus, because now we've seen former President Trump with our own eyes through the magic of television. If you weren't in the convention hall, we can see that he's mostly okay. Yes, he's bandaged. Yes, he was wounded, but he does not appear to be seriously harmed. And I think that will help encourage the Democrats, who are already hearing calls from their most strident supporters, to get back on the attack. And I expect as soon as tomorrow, we're going to see a renewed focus on what it would mean for President Trump to be elected to a second term, and what that would mean for the Democratic base, black people, Latino people, women, and immigrants. And that, I think, will be the business of tomorrow.
Yeah, I don't expect that we're going to see Governor J.B. Pritzker. We've heard that he won't be making an appearance here this week, as had previously been planned. But certainly the Democrats are feeling much more like they can take the fight to Republicans here in Milwaukee. You know, they're planning to have an event tomorrow where they're going to discuss Republican records on abortion rights, on, you know, unions, all these things that are really red meat for, you know, the Democratic base of voters, and things where they see an opportunity to put their message out there and, you know, create some divisions between Trump and Biden, really try to lay out for voters, especially those key undecideds as well, you know, and say, hey, this is what's at stake in November. You know, we heard from Teamsters President Sean O'Brien, which is, you know, a pretty surprising development to see, you know, a major labor union leader speaking at the RNC. And of course, he has asked to speak at the DNC as well. He said he's not going to be endorsing, but that is a huge issue for certainly voters in Illinois, although no one particularly expects Trump to win Illinois. But yes, you know, there's a lot at stake here, and I think the Democrats see that now that the temperature has cooled a bit, that we've seen that President Trump is, you know, safe, able to get up and, you know, get around, that he's injured but recovered, you know, significantly, that they can start to get a little more aggressive with their messaging.
Yeah, Nick,
you said those
speech that we saw from I was just going to say that speech from Sean O'Brien, I think there was a real moment where he sort of decried the influence of the Chamber of Commerce, which of course has historically been aligned with the Republican Party, and sort of said they were basically involved in getting welfare for business. That did not go over well. We'll have to see how it plays.
All right, Nick, you said those two words that I was going to get to, red meat. Heather Hendershot, we've got about 20 seconds left. Do you think we'll get some more of that this week, that so-called red meat?
We're going to get a lot more red meat, yeah, for sure. And I think you're right to point out that the Democrats are going to dig into abortion issues, women's health care issues, and try to amplify that. And the Republicans are going to keep sort of setting that aside and not digging into that. Although tonight they were talking about the Biden forcing women girls to play on sports teams with transgenders,
Right.
It was not a strong talking point.
Hope you're not a vegetarian. We'll have to leave it there.
All this red meat talk.
Thanks to Heather Hendershot, Heather Sharone, and Nick Blumberg. I do know all of your names. It's been a big week, and it's only Monday. We're back to wrap things up right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Jim and Kay Mabey family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
And that is our show tonight. Be sure to join us tomorrow at 5:30 and 10 for day two of the Republican National Convention. And be sure to check out our website for the very latest convention coverage. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a personal injury law firm dedicated to preserving the dignity and rights of all individuals.